The Warrior Soul Podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppingfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert, and I am on today with a very special individual, my friend, my brother, my business partner for a long time now. I've known this guy for, I think, over 12 years. Fellow Marine, fellow bodybuilder. Well, I'm a former bodybuilder. He's a current bodybuilder. You know, he's been making Warrior Soul t-shirts forever now, and he's doing some awesome things out in the community, and I wanted to talk about that today. Albert Carrasco, welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast, man.
Thank you, Chris.
So what have you been up to, man? How's life been up there in Santa Barbara?
Oh, man. I've been up to a lot. You know, specifically the last few months have been interesting because of the current events with surrounding COVID. So, you know, just kind of like this forced quiet that I've had to live through has made me reevaluate some things, you know. And actually, hold on, I'm going to turn off this fan because I don't want to disturb the audio at all.
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay. Anyway, so I'm back. Oh, yeah, so much better. I hope that you can tell. But yeah, so I've just had a lot going on, and I started thinking about, like, what do I want to do when society resumes? And I started thinking about my own life, and have I been maximizing what I believe in and all that? And obviously, you and I have worked together. I have backed this venture, however I know how, since you first talked to me. And, you know, I've kind of helped others, like, get stuff going, but I've never fully created something that was just my own idea. And, you know, I know now I don't want to be a national screen printer, like shipping every day or trying to make this big operation. So that's where I found like this new venture that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, man. Let's talk a little bit about your background first, because I think that plays into a lot here, right? You had a real, real tough childhood, right?
Yes. And it's so funny because, you know, for you almost feel guilty. Like, you're like, if you complain or talk about where you come from, like, you know, you have people who are like, oh, that's so inspiring. And I've thought that about others before. And then you have other people who are like, I don't know, they just have like these weird opinions, and then you feel guilty for saying anything. Uh-huh. But I grew up pretty shitty, and it's taken me a long time to get to this point of comfortability where I feel like I can actually talk about it. I feel like it doesn't really make me as sad anymore as it used to maybe a few years ago still. And, you know, like, we all work through shit. But anyway, I grew up in a single parent household, a lot of domestic abuse. You know, I got to the point where I thought police coming to my house was normal. I ended up in an orphanage. And, you know, like, we can just go all day. Like, there's so many things I could say, but we're not talking about that specifically today.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really tough for you growing up, but, you know, you ended up, you know, you were able to attend the University of California at Santa Barbara. You're able to become a Marine. You were able to do a lot of stuff despite all that. What do you think allowed you to be able to really get to where you are? You know, which is, you know, you're a well-adjusted, good, successful person, right? Who's doing things in society. What is it about you, or what is it about your path that allowed you to get here?
Okay. I've had a lot of time to think about that too. And so it's a combination of things. I do think that I was born with this idea that life is bigger than what you see around you. Mm-hmm. And I can't really explain that because that wasn't taught to me by anybody. Maybe movies, you know, maybe me looking around my life and being like, damn, this is weird. But then, like, seeing in movies that this other world could exist, I was like, damn, okay, maybe one day that could be my life. Like, maybe I can, why, if that exists in the movies, why doesn't it exist in real life for me? So that would probably be the closest thing I can tell you that opened my eyes. But besides movies, this fantasy world that I've never lived, right? There were some key external influences in my life that helped me out. And, you know, they are all very crucial in my life. And I know that, without those specific people, I don't think I would have been bumped off of a trail that was destined for failure, to be honest.
Yeah. No, that's a really important thing to realize. And, you know, we didn't grow up with money. I had a single parent household. You know, my mom worked three jobs and stuff like that. And what's interesting about it is, like, I remember as a little kid, I didn't realize that people had fathers until, like, I watched TV and I saw like this concept of a dad. And, like, I remember, like, asking my mom, like, what's a dad? Like, what is a father? Like, I didn't quite understand that concept. How come I don't have one? And then, you know, I heard my friends talking about their fathers, and then I remember, like, being kind of sad about it. And I was like, you know, I don't have a dad. Like, wow, that sucks. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And it's so funny that you're saying this, because I felt the same way. And us talking about this, it's so real to us and probably anybody listening who grew up without a father. But the people who did grow up with a father, they have, you know, it's really hard to imagine life without them.
Right.
And it's this two-way street. We're like two one-way streets, really. Like, people can't understand the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like this lack of communication, not even a lack of communication, a lack of experience, right? Like, people don't know. They don't know what it's like, you know, growing up like that, you know, and figuring stuff out for yourself as a young man, because, you know, that's an awkward phase when you get to your teenage years and you're trying to figure out all this crap. It's like, what the hell are you supposed to do? You know?
Yeah. I mean, and teenagers, which is obviously the intended audience or members for this org, that's when you start making mistakes. You know, hormones start changing, people start feeling more pressure from their peers to do this or that, be funny, all these like roles of who you're going to be as an adult. So I agree with that, man.
Yeah. And then there's this other thing as a young man where, you know, if you don't know how to be a man, you're going to find ways to prove you're a man, right? So you're going to be the craziest one in your group. You know what I mean? Like you're going to do things that other people wouldn't do. And, you know, to some extent, like, I think that's a big reason why you get a lot of fatherless children in the military, joining things like the Marine Corps. But it's also a big reason why you get a lot of fatherless children in gangs and going down the wrong path.
Yeah, 1,000% true.
So, you know, you got through there and you get to UCSB and you know, you're going to college and everything like that. Well, I've been a graduate student at UCSB. I know what it's like there at that school, right? It's one of the richest schools in the UC system. Most of the kids there are highly privileged, right? Which isn't a bad thing, but it is what it is, right? You know,
right.
You go there. Isla Vista is kind of like this paradise community where kids just, they go to school and they party and things like that. What was that experience like for you? What was that differential like?
You know, it was wild because I went from my house where, you know, I wasn't allowed to, I had to listen to do everything the way my mom wanted to complete freedom. And I had already told my mom, you know, like I'm never coming back when I left. So I was at UCSB and I'm also for the first time exposed to just, I guess the way that life is. Like I had gotten a taste of it through high school, but the level of like parental support and honestly money, like just the, like how much money people had blew me away because I had no idea. It was surreal. And to be honest, I found myself wanting to fit in. Actually, I was embarrassed by my past. I never wanted to talk to anyone about it. I didn't want people to know where I came from. I didn't want people to know that I was poor growing up or that I anything about my family. I just kind of, it was weird. I felt almost a sense of like guilt and embarrassment, which was, you know, comes from not being able to talk through things. Like, who was I going to talk to about that?
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's counseling services on campus, but this was 2007 when I first went there. And to be honest, the whole idea of going to talk to a counselor was still very weird back then. It wasn't, I would say that it wasn't until the last couple of years that some of that's been, it's like, hey, it's okay to talk to somebody movement, you know? But yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah. Cause I remember you back then and, you know, for me, my experience at UCSB, I was older than everybody. I was in graduate school. I'd been through the Marine Corps already and things like that. Right. And I'm teaching these kids and like, I'm looking out and some of these kids are leaving my classroom and I look at them going into the parking lot and they're jumping into BMWs and they're driving home. And like, you know, I was dirt poor at that point too. So, you know, even though I was a little bit older than everybody. And then, you know, I ran into you and you had a job. You were working in the veterans office over there and, you know, you were jumping into things and trying to scrape by and you had that experience, I think, of working with the veterans at that university. And kind of seeing what they were going through too. I mean, like there were veterans on that campus who were kind of sleeping in their cars. There were veterans on that campus who were highly dependent on the GI Bill. And even though the GI Bill was paying it, it really wasn't enough, right? It was barely enough to cover expenses for everything.
I think the last year that you were there, was when they switched over to, or they created the post 9/11 GI Bill.
Yeah.
Because I remember specifically what you're talking about. Yeah. It was chapter 33, I believe. No, 33 is Montgomery. Sorry. Anyway, it's been a long time.
Yeah. They had the Montgomery GI Bill. It would give you like a few hundred dollars a quarter or a semester, right?
Yeah, and then that's what it was. So the Montgomery was the old one, and then there was post 9/11, and that one had BAH, I think. So it was better. But I remember getting a lot of complaints, and I just, you know, there was nothing that I could do to help. I was just helping process paperwork.
Yeah. Yeah. But you were one of the guys who, like, you know, you helped me navigate that system. You helped me with that paperwork. And you know, you were younger too. And I was like, you know, this kid's working hard. He's different from all these people over here, because, you know, it's an alienating experience when you're on a campus like that. And, you know, you don't come from privilege. You've got to work for everything you got, right? So you got to do your studies. Then you got to get a job. I had a part-time job. I actually had a full-time job as a personal trainer. I was like waking up at 4 a.m, heading over to Santa Barbara to train people in the gym. Then I'd come back, I'd teach, and then I would go to class and try to write. And it's just like living that experience as like a veteran on a campus like that was just crazy. And I know that's how it was for you too, because you had to work your whole time while you were there, you know?
I did. I had multiple jobs, to be honest. I had a job at this copy place where that's kind of how I got into printing to begin with. I actually worked at In-N-Out during college, which was pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. It's actually a lot of work. You guys have been through the drive-thru in California. Yeah. But yeah, man. And that's another thing, actually, when I realized that some of my friends, like, to them, they're like, work? What do you mean? Why? Like, I'm not going to work. And like in certain conversations, it hit me that they could literally just go to college and their parents had the money to pay for their rent and their school and their food. And these kids bought a lot of stuff, you know, like, it's not like they... Some of them were more frugal, like, oh no, you know, I can't spend extra money because it's my dad's. Like my dad said, I'm not. And other words were like, whatever I want, my dad's going to buy it.
Yeah.
And that to me was so foreign, because if I, you know, in my shoes, if I called my mom, hey mom, I need $1,200 for rent, she'd be like, the fuck are you talking about? You know, like,
yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And then, What's interesting about that campus, and not to bring up a really, really bad memory, but you know, that's the campus where Elliot Rodger went on a rampage. You know, a kid who had pretty much everything in the world, you know, had a BMW, his parents were paying for absolutely everything. He murdered his roommates, and then went on a rampage and murdered kids across Isla Vista.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just to bring up a little bit of contrast here, you know, that's the kind of world it was, you know, where somebody thought was so privileged that he thought, you know,
a flock to him. That's what you felt entitled to women, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, on a campus like that, I think a lot of people were surprised it happened, but I remember thinking when it happened, I was like, you know, that was a powder keg kind of waiting to happen there. Right.
Yeah.
And one of those, you know, a lot of pathologies, a lot of weird personality issues arise. I mean, I remember as a teacher there, you know, kids would come up and say, hey, I need an A because I'm going to law school. And I would say, well, if you're in the top 1% of my class, then you're going to get an A. If you do everything you're supposed to, you're going to get a C. You know, it was just a crazy world to be in, and you know, the psychology of how that affects you. It's like it could be really, really heavy, and you could go really dark really easily.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also part of why it even took me a while to get to where I am now, because I feel like my life has been in stages. So when I was at UCSB, there was so much culture shock that there were times where I like just felt worthless by comparison, you know, and I, to be honest, I held on to the idea that my purpose was to be a Marine Corps officer, which is why I went, I think I had either just gotten to seniors increment or about to go when we met. And yeah, that was really interesting, because I just, you know, I feel like in a lot of conversations with some of my friends groups, even it would be about like, oh, Albert's going to be a Marine officer. And I don't know, there's almost like this acceptance by some of my groups that like, oh yeah, that's what he wants to do. Like that, like it was like my role, you know what I mean? But it was like nothing else. Just like, he's a military guy.
Yeah. Yeah. They kind of like, they just categorize you as that, and that's what you're going to do. And then they're going to go off, they're going to do their, you know, get their job or whatever. And
yeah,
you know, it's just bright skies from there on out. Right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's funny too, because, a conversation that I remember having with this guy, his name is Kevin, I don't remember his last name, but freshman year, you know, he's like a little surfer dude. And there was a lot of guys who were nice to me in the dorms, which is also weird because in high school, I didn't really have that many friends. And anyway, so people being nice was weird to me because I didn't understand that either. Mm. And anyway, this kid was like, hey, you want to get breakfast before class? I was like, sure. And I had breakfast with this dude who I'd never really met or talked to before. And, you know, like that was normal. People would just go get food because you live in the same hall. Like, that's weird to me. Even like now, people aren't that nice. And we're eating there, and he's like asking about like my, like where I came from. And of course I'm dodging questions about where I came from because I don't really want to talk about it. And then I just, you know, played around San Diego and the sports I did and shit like that, but nothing deep. And then he ended up being the first person I ever heard say, by the time I'm this, I want to have $1 million.
Yeah.
And that stands out to me because I have, come to understand that like, money is taught, you know, so like your relationship with money is its own thing. And so I had never once, like, you hear a lot of people say, oh, I want to be rich one day, I want to be this, I want to be that. Like, that was like the idea that somebody would just say, I want to have $1 million, to me was like different. There was something behind those words and how he said it. And even like, even now, still my interpretation of who he was and what he wanted to do, it was a character that you could tell, like, he'd been raised this way.
Yeah.
And again, I just, every time, like, I met new people and I got to understand them, it was just culture shock.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, you ran into screen printing while you were there. That's something that you picked up. It taught you a lot about business and,
yes,
you know, how to run your own business. What was that experience like for you?
It was awakening because, like I said, at this point, still going through phases. I actually got into screen printing because I had decided that, you know, the Marine Corps officer life was not going to be for me. And that was after talking to a lot of my NCOs and staff NCOs that I respect. Talking to my older brother who was an active duty Marine, you know, I took a lot of time to do some soul searching and figure out what I want to do with my life. And I like was leaning towards getting, you know, just not being a Marine officer, but then this opportunity to start this business came up. So I think that the reason I ran with it was because I looked at finances and potential and I was like, this is my chance to break out of my cycle. It was the first time that I was like, if this all goes right, I won't be poor anymore. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's literally the biggest driving force behind creating the screen printing business.
Yeah. And so you've been doing that for a long time now, right?
Yeah, I have. And you know, being so well connected at UCSB that first year, it was like, I basically just printed for all my friends and frats in different organizations. And it wasn't hard for me to find clients because I just dug myself into my immediate market.
Yeah. And then, you know, you had UCSB there, which allowed you to do the readers and things like that, which is, you know, you find the demand for things that you can do, things that people are going to need, right? Things that people need to have, and that creates a cash flow for your business, and you know, you're able to capitalize on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and we did. So
So from there, you know, you and I linked up again. We started Warrior Soul. We started the t-shirt company there, and you've been printing t-shirts for us. And, you know, now you're looking at your life and you want to create this new mission now. And you right. came to us with this, what was it, like three or 4 months ago, you were talking about this idea. And I know it had been on your mind for a lot longer than that.
Yeah. But,
you had been working in the community with children, right?
Yes, I have. So it was actually the first year you and I were working together. So that was 2014 that we launched Warrior Soul. And, you know, it's funny because like I said, the reason that I wanted to get into business was I want to have more power. I want to have more money to affect change, right? Because I've always thought there's a way that I can help the country, right? Because that's how I ended up convincing myself it's okay that I'm not going to be a Marine officer. I can still help my country by doing something private sector. So anyway, in 2015, which was like about a year later when we started Warrior Soul, I found this organization in town, and I knew that I wanted to give back. So I started working with them. They had, you know, a bunch of different art programs. So I taught design, and I taught like basically what to do for screen printing. And I started to get my feet wet and like learning about these kids and stuff. And honestly, I knew that I wasn't meant to just teach design, but I wasn't sure what I could do. Cause I was like, this is the only thing that I can do right now. And I also taught at juvenile hall. There's a camp out here. Artemis, sorry, my dogs are like being annoying now. They're like, what are you doing? Get me out of here. It's okay. We'll go into the bit. But yeah, so I took a step further and I was like, no, I'm going to find something else. And by this time, this was like in the last year, you know, I have gotten into fitness and whatnot. And it's funny you say it that way. Anyway, I was teaching this workout class at juvenile hall, and this was a lot closer to what I wanted because I realized this other organization, not all the kids even needed to be there. It was worse than UCSB. Some of those kids were there because, and these are in high school, they were there because they needed volunteer hours. They didn't care about getting the work done to them. It was just all resume building. And it was really disappointing because to me, I was like, when I was a kid and an adult who knew something about anything, I listened if they were speaking because I wanted to learn what they had to say. These kids though, whatever it is they had going on in their life, like it was like, yeah, whatever, Albert. And so it kept getting worse because I feel like the first year the kids really were more troubled, so they needed help. And every year they like kept letting people in who didn't need to be there, which was disappointing because then I felt like, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. So anyway, fast forward, I'm teaching juvenile hall. It's a lot more in what I thought and expected, but it's tough because I only get them 2 hours a week. And as I'm like starting to learn more about these kids, I realize I can't help. Me coming here to teach at jail is borderline worthless because it's a little piece of heaven. They come in, they work out with me for 2 hours. And as soon as I'm gone, they're right back to their roles. They basically forget that they were even there. My class is not impactful enough for them to change. Also, the ones who get out, they have no way to find me. There is no supporting program to be like, hey, when you guys get out of juvenile hall, come into my program at this location, and then we can't help them stay out of jail, right? So, let me back up. When I say we can't help them stay out of jail, it's like a child who has already been to juvenile hall, if they go back to the same environment and everything in their life is the same as before, they're probably going to go back. And I saw that. A bunch of these kids, 2 weeks later, they were back. And then some of them didn't want to come to my class because they were embarrassed. Some of them did show up in my class and, you know, more like they took the class clown type of attitude. And they're like, yeah, I'm back, blah, whatever, but at least I'll get ripped. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay, cool, guys. So, yeah, that's when during the COVID reflection that I've had, that's when I realized, okay, I got into business because I wanted to actually help people. I don't need to do that and waste all this time by spreading out my attention span, right? And then the other one is I've wanted to help kids who are in this vicious cycle of, I don't know, life destined to fail because they have no resources or no fucking role models. Like, so why don't I just create an organization that's directly solving that problem? And I haven't really put too much out there yet, but from like the little bit that I have, I'm getting a lot of insane support. And I think it's because this mission is pure. You know, it literally is something that I've created that would have helped me as a child. And I know it would have helped my friends because I come from a neighborhood where the people I went to elementary school are either dead, they're in prison, they have been to prison, they're just not doing a whole lot. And a couple of them are lucky and they're doing something, but it's not a lot, man. And so instead of complaining the way a lot of people complain and do fucking nothing, I decided I'm going to do something.
Yeah. And that's a really important thing to think about there because, you know, when you come from a neighborhood, like you can't always see the forest from the trees for the trees, right? It's really, really hard because your reality is, okay, you learn how to survive a certain way. You learn how to live a certain way. Every fiber of your body goes into understanding that. And then it's not until like you get a chance to see how the world is, right? And how the world is not, you can't sit there and complain about things. You can't sit there and think about what you don't have. You got to think about how you can change your life, how you can change your actions and focus on the things you can control. And if you can do that, you're going to be in a much better position to change things than, you know, sitting there and complaining or worrying about this or worrying about that and thinking about what you don't have, right? Yeah. You know, realizing that's a really important first step to getting to a position of where you can actually change your life.
Yeah, correct.
So tell me a little bit about this program for the audience. What's it going to entail? What are you working on? What are you trying to do here?
Yeah. In an ideal world, which is what I'm going to say, I'm going to tell you guys exactly how it needs to run for it to be successful the way I see it. Funny enough though, before I tell you that, some of the other people I've talked to, that tend to have worked in services like this, the thing that I hear is, oh my God, that's so much. Oh my God. And it's like all of these, like the people who know the most, they're the ones who tell me like it can't be done. And the people who are just normal people hear this and they're like, oh yeah, that's exactly what needs to happen. How can I help? I have friends from high school I haven't spoken to in years, like that have told me, dude, I want to fund this. Like, you tell me like where to donate. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool because, you know, it means that people actually agree. So now you guys get to decide if you agree. So in an ideal world, I'll have kids show up right after school gets out. So I'm thinking 3:00. 3:00 should be enough time for everyone to get there. And then because these kids, assuming most of them are going to be from an impoverished neighborhood, because that's kind of how I'm going to try to pick who gets to go, even though I plan on not turning people away if they really want to be there. I don't care if they're poor or not. But anyway, they get there at 3:00 and we're going to have this like 2-hour mandatory tutoring time, because something that I want these kids to understand, again, 6th to 12th grade, is that they cannot fall back on their academics.
Right.
I think that one of the problems we have is a lot of kids will, like, especially again in impoverished neighborhoods, they'll focus only on their sport. So you'll hear these kids working their ass off to be the best football player, but their school sucks. They're barely getting C's, or the teachers straight up in some cases are helping them get C's so that they keep playing football, because that's literally all they have.
Right.
And they hold on to this dream that they're going to be an NFL player because they're so good. But again, they're from this league, that this little nobody league that no one's ever heard of. And there's actually kids way better than them, but they don't know it because they don't know it because they've never seen it.
Right.
And so it sucks because then they graduate high school and they're not going to the NFL.
And the whole world crashes down.
Exactly. And then you have these high school football stars who they're not doing anything.
They never amount to a thing. Yeah. That's a really hard realization for somebody to come to, right? Where you're the big dog in your neighborhood. You know, you do something, it feels like it's positive. And what happens is you get so wrapped up into it, you become you're a big fish in a small pond, and you don't realize that you're a small fish in a big ocean of talent. And that's where a lot of people get really wrapped up, or they get injured.
That too.
and you know, you get injured to the point where, you know, you're spending all this money trying to fix this injury and things like that, and you end up, you know, not able to catch up with where you were, and you know, that's how a lot of bad stuff happens too.
Yeah. So I think that's why the academics is an absolute must. And I don't want it to be like, you know, I'm in charge of the culture, so I'll get to change it and not be like, oh, I have to do my homework. It'll be like, all right, I got to get this done. Mm-hmm. So, whoa, hold on. Did I lose you? Oh, no, you're there. Somebody called.
No, you're still there.
All right, cool. Yeah. So, and you know, we're really close to UCSB, so I'm sure that I can find tutors who like to work out. So that's who I'll use. And then, why do they need tutoring, right? Because some people aren't going to understand that. Well, some of these kids, their parents aren't engineers or whatever. Like, if they need help with math or whatever subject, they can't ask their parents for help. And to be honest, I was one of those kids. You know, if I ever needed help, I actually would go to tutoring with my teacher during lunch. Because that would be the only time. And I wish now that I had more help with academics growing up. Because even at OCS, I was one of the honor grads. Mm-hmm. This is funny. It's an example of where academics have held me back. I would have been number one in the company if my academic score was higher. Mm-hmm. But I'm just not as book smart as other people. I was the most fit. My leadership score was good enough where I was like, I graduated, I think, like a number four in the company. Mm-hmm. But anyway, after we're done working out, with the tutoring, we're going to do a workout. And this workout will follow a specific program. We'll probably cycle different types of programs so the kids get exposed to different things. And that way they can be beasts, basically. I want kids to have the opportunity to learn what it means to push your body to its limits, and, you know, all of those unspeakables like that. And you can probably help me put this to words, but some of those lessons you can only learn by pushing your body really hard. Like, you were a power lifter, you know, imagine what that mentality that it takes to go look at something that you know is heavy as fuck and you're gonna pick it up.
Yeah. Well, that's something I remember when I was, because I got into powerlifting at a young age, right? So, like, you know, not having a dad, my mom, like, dropped me off at a gym. She looked at me one day and she was like, listen, you got to get strong because I can't teach you that. So she handed me a $20 bill, dropped me off at a gym, and then sped off. And then in the gym, the guys, like, I was hanging out for a couple of weeks, like, just playing around. I didn't really know what I was doing. And then these guys just grabbed me and they're like, hey, you're powerlifting on our team. We're going to teach you how. And yeah, I mean, it's like a certain mentality that you develop that you're just going to be able to pick that weight up, you know, and it does a lot for somebody's self-confidence, because anybody can do it. You know, you can get anybody to deadlift 300 pounds, you know, what I mean? Like, that's the way it goes, but like, you know, it's difficult to get somebody to show up. If you can get them to show up, then you can get them to deadlift 300 pounds. Dogs are going crazy. Oh boy, doggy fight.
All right, I have two puppies and they were just getting a little too rowdy because apparently I'm ignoring them for this.
Well, that's okay, man. We got to wrap it up here in a second, but
yeah. Well, they're in their crate now. They're going to chill for a second. Also, that's a pit bull bulldog mix that you heard roaring. She's vocal sometimes like that, but
they weren't like going at it. They were just playing.
No, they didn't even make any contact. She was just saying
they snored a lot.
Huh?
They snored a lot.
Yeah, both of them did.
Yeah, and the other one's a shepherd, right?
Yeah. So they're both female. Again, I learned a lot lately about dogs too, because I have to learn so I can make sure that they're good. And that is a very rare occurrence. I think that it was literally because I was ignoring them. But anyway. sorry. Okay. So yes, where were we? Them learning how to push their body, discipline, self-confidence, all those like cool things about it. So by the time that these kids will be finishing high school, like them training for 6th to 12th grade, I think like my goal would be that they're elite level athletes. Yeah. You know, I'm not creating this to be like, oh yeah, let's get in shape. Let's get the kids out there moving, blood pumping. No, there's a goal. And I want them to be at like an elite level of athletics. That's the goal. Not half-assed program. Like, and you know, well, why? Why am I going to put pressure on these kids? Because they're not getting pressure anywhere else. And by me pushing them and holding them accountable to be the best and their best, they're going to learn. And I know that they'll thank me for it one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the very last piece is, you know, I'm probably going to work with like restaurants or whoever that I can. And these will feed them and they'll go home. And I'm thinking this will all wrap up by like 6:37. So by the time that happens, they're home. All they have to do is get ready for their day and, to finish their day and then get back to it the next day. Yeah. And hopefully they're too tired to fuck around. They'll actually just do what they're supposed to do and go to bed.
Yeah. And I think that's important too, because you're teaching structure, right? You're teaching structure. And the thing about a kid's life, a lot of times they're not in control of a lot of different things, right? So they're not in control of like when they're supposed to be in school, when they're not supposed to be in school. Once they get home, they're not in control of their environment in a lot of cases. Like they can't control if the TV's on all day because their parents want to watch TV, right? They can't control if their parents are going off about something or anything like that. But if you get them in that environment, you're teaching them in structure, you're making sure they're focusing on their academics, they get that time, the time to focus, to be clear, and then you getting them to focus on their bodies, focus on training and things like that, then, you know, it reduces the noise in their lives and it gets them to focus on that one thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, that's awesome, man. What's the program called?
It's going to be the social component of our brand. So it's Warrior Soul Youth Academy.
Nice. Yeah. The Warrior Soul Youth Academy. And that's up there on Instagram already, right? You're building that name out there.
Yes. I actually just did a soft launch. You know, I decided I had to put something out there and I knew that it'll like be calling me constantly. Okay. Do this. So it's been helpful.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Now, where can people, if they want to be involved, if they want to donate, if they want to, tutor, if they want to be involved in some capacity, how do they do so?
Okay. So I would say that most of our fan base is not going to be local. So I think that the biggest help we can get initially is just sharing any of the content that they like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they see a video or a post, just share it. Help us build the name. We're not in the fundraising portion yet, but we will be soon, and you'll get to see a more polished presentation, little elevator pitch. And so there will be links to that available once we go live. And if you are local, just probably emailing me. And I'll have that linked to the Instagram account soon. But yeah, I plan on having all that ready in the next like month or so.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Awesome, man. Any words for our audience out there? I know it's been some crazy times and everything like that. And
yeah. Well, I hope everybody's doing okay. You know, it's a lot of things that have made vision clear, but also very muddy at the same time, depending on what you're looking at. And, you know, it's like, if you guys do believe in this, I hope that you guys can back us. And, you know, I mean, even with the current events, I think it's even more proof of why stuff like this has to exist. Yeah. You know, I don't personally believe in government run programs because it's the government. You know, there's no passion behind it. It's a check in the box. It's like, hey, look, guys, see, you voted for us and I put together this thing, threw money on it.
This is what your tax dollars are doing.
Yeah. I believe that if everything that's government only was run, like had a private competitor, it would be better. Because what comes with private sector? Customer service. The fact that you have to maintain a brand image, that you have to be accountable. I just don't feel the same way about government-run programs.
Innovation. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, listen, man, I want to acknowledge you. I think you're doing some fantastic things. We are 100% in support of you. Anything I can do to help you with this, to try and push this out there. You know, you've got my full support and, you know, thank you for doing this, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you because, you know, you've been part of my adult journey and, reawakening and whatnot. And obviously, I've just enjoyed knowing you and getting to talk to you over the years. So thank you.
Same here, man. Same here. And, you know, to everybody out there, I would say, you know, use this as an example. I mean, there's a lot you can complain about in life. There's a lot you can talk about, but it's action, right? If we're going to make this country great, it's got to be through action, not words, right? And these are the things we got to do. Stepping up in our communities, teaching leadership, teaching self-accountability. These are the things our community's good at, and these are the things we need to try to instill in society. So,
yeah.
With that, guys, thank you so much for listening. I will get some links up to the new Instagram account so you guys can check out the content, and then we'll be putting it out there when it's time to donate and to actually help this cause. So, and I hope you all have a good rest of your week. Get out there and live your best lives while you can. And this is Chris and Albert, and we are out.